Torchwood files have been activated. Enjoy the show.
The Discussing Network presents Discussing Who, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm Kyle Jones, and I'm going to start this episode by welcoming back Lee Shackelford. Mr. Shackelford, how are you?
I'm good. Already weary from trying to get things ready for Halloween in our neighborhood. You know, we're trying to take it seriously.
Well, so you know, something to take serious because as of this recording, it's the 29th. Mm-hmm. That means tomorrow is 29th plus one, which is 30th, mm-hmm. and the two-part finale of Agatha All Along.
Okay.
There you go. I can't wait. Can't wait. But what I also can't wait to say is, Mr. Brown, Clarence Brown, how are you?
And I killed Sparky, too. I'm doing well. As always, happy to be on with you guys, with the fam, to talk about some Doctor Who.
I don't mind us being called the fam.
I love being part of this. With the fam. Part of Clarence's fam.
There you go.
Oh, 100%.
So cool with that. So cool with that. Maybe not for Doctor's companions, but for us, it works. So anything going on, anything you guys are watching or doing that you want to talk about before we get into this review? Things that make you go,
Not particularly, I don't think. Oh, well, I did get to see Star Trek, Con, the musical, recently, this past weekend, and I had a great time. My first time being in theater for a musical, so I rather enjoy it.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I've seen photographs from a production in Texas. Oh, maybe that was the one.
Just finally
Texas hit me. Yeah, of course.
Right down the street.
Right. That was, yeah.
So you had never been to a musical production ever?
No. And quite frankly, I think the only one I can really remember, I'm sure I've seen all the old school classics on TV or something, the TV productions of it or the movie productions. But Hamilton is the first one I really kind of gravitated to.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd rather, not being a musical person, I very much enjoyed a Star Trek centric musical by our friend Brent Black. So, yeah, got to meet him as well. So I very much enjoyed myself.
Wow. Well,
Oh, yeah. It was, I think you would enjoy yourself.
Oh.
So, quick trivia question here. Since you speak of Hamilton, Hamilton has a tie to Doctor Who. What is that tie?
The real Alexander Hamilton or the musical?
No, the musical Hamilton. Okay. There's something in or someone in Hamilton that's tied to Doctor Who.
A lot of people have been in Hamilton.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let me just
you
say
mean that, the original cast.
Right? Well, the original cast that we saw on Disney Plus was the, I think it's the character of the king, is played by Jonathan Groff, who also is Rogue. So that's our tie to Doctor Who.
I didn't realize that.
So yes, indeed.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Nice. Indeed, indeed.
Nice.
Indeed, indeed, indeed.
They say.
Yes, indeed.
I'm not going to sing it. Don't get me started.
Well, before Clarence starts singing or before I start singing or before any... Oh, let me say this real quick. Talking about theater, one of my favorite type of theater experiences, and I hope I say this correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, is what's called theater in the round, where everyone is on every side of the stage in the middle. Isn't that correct, theater in the round?
And you can see the audience on the other side?
Yeah. Yes. I love that. I love that experience of having everything, the action in the middle. That's just really cool. But what's also cool is there's something that you like saying to people, Lee, and what might that be?
We know you got other things you could be doing, especially at this busy and energetic time of year, but we are so grateful that you chose to spend this little time with us talking about Torchwood.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
And Clarence, you also have something you like sharing, and what is that?
Yes, you can support the show by subscribing, leaving a review, or telling a friend. If you have a review idea or anything else you want us to know, please send that in to discussingwho@gmail.com or @discussingwho on any and all social media.
Indeed. And there is something that I want to comment on. We did have someone who reached out to us on social media and asked the question of why is this sometimes the live stream current and then the audio comes a couple of weeks later. That's my fault. Absolutely 100% my fault. It's called Kyle has a lot going on, and I do try to get them out as quickly as possible, but the fault is completely at my foot or at my feet, and you know, I'll take that completely. But that also says that the person who made the comment is enjoying what we do,
yeah,
and is enjoying listening. So thank right. you.
Otherwise,
thank
it wouldn't you. Matter.
Otherwise, yeah. it wouldn't matter. They would just be like, oh, I don't know. They might say something like, well, that's all right then.
Once upon a time, William Shatner said to Kyle Jones, get a life.
And I said, mad cow. But anyway. All right. I do have a life, and that life is me being able to say, if you have not seen Greeks Bearing Gifts, put us on pause. Go out. Watch the episode. Come back, because from this moment forward, spoilers.
Spoilers.
Affirmative.
Spoilers.
Spoilers? What spoilers?
And I killed Sparky, too.
Alrighty, the spoiler warning has gone out, and we are back to review Greeks Bearing Gifts. This is the 7th episode of the first series of Torchwood, first airing on BBC Three on the 26th of November, 2006. Clarence Brown, I'll start with you. Some review. What say ye?
I think I enjoyed this episode, man. I really had fun with it. Really love that we got to stay with Tosh and really deal with her in this episode. And, you know, kind of have an episode from her point of view. We'll get into it, but suffice to say, I really, really enjoyed the episode.
All right. Lee Shackelford, what did you think?
I really enjoyed it, too, I think, for the same reasons. As we watch these first few episodes, it feels to me like we're introducing the crew to the audience by way of, you know, having one episode centering on each of these characters. And the Torchwood way is that you take one of these characters out in the script's gentle hand, and then the script squeezes them until their head pops off. And this week it's Tasha's turn. So that's how we do it on Torchwood. We have to watch these people suffer.
Mm.
So, but this time it's not Gwen. We did not beat up on Gwen in this one. How about that?
No, Gwen wasn't suffering. She may be doing other things, but she wasn't suffering. Right. So I think I'm going to follow suit with you guys. I think I'm going to say that I did enjoy it too. I found myself A, not bored, B, invested in the series of it. I mean, the story that was, you know, going on. And I thought it had a good resolution. Last week, I remember saying that I went back and wanted to watch the end again because I had forgotten to watch all of it and realized, oops, yeah, you did watch all of it. I didn't feel that way this week. You know, I was invested, enjoyed it. And this one was written by Toby White or Whithouse or Whitehouse. I'm thinking it's going to be Whithouse without the E. He has also written for Doctor Who, notably School Reunion, The Vampires of Venice, The God Complex, A Town Called Mercy, Under the Lake, Before the Flood, and The Lie of the Land.
Yep. 9 episodes in all.
Yes.
One Torchwood.
And one Torchwood, and something that I did not know until I clicked on him and saw his picture and then realized also he had a cameo in Stephen Moffat's last episode, Twice Upon a Time. He and Mark Gatiss were both in that trench. He played the German soldier that froze along with that other character, spoilers, that I won't say who is, in case you haven't seen that and you're listening to it and haven't seen that. So that's cool. They're very, very
cool. Yeah, I did not know that. I always think things like that are fun.
So we talked about a minute ago that we're getting to see each of the different characters, go through the ringer every episode. Question to you guys, and Lee, I'll start with you with this one. At this point, Do you like the character?
Yeah, and I think that's part of the genius of doing it this way, is that you have to be on the side of these people as we watch them suffer. And we see them come to grips with complex moral questions. You know, I was just listening to our episode that you had released of about Cyberwoman. And I was thinking about how difficult all of that is for Yanto and for everybody who cares about Yanto. That even as silly as some things in the episode are, we are really on board with that, and we want him to be okay on the other side of this. And it calls for tough decisions, and so only Jack is in a position to make them because everybody else is emotionally compromised. Mm. We're wondering how much is left of Lisa, and Clarence said this in the episode, and I thought it was right on the money. We're trying to figure out how much of her humanity is left. And Clarence said, when we get to the end of the episode, we're wondering how much humanity is left in Jack.
Mm.
And I thought, yeah, this episode raises big questions, as silly as some parts of it are, like I said, but it's so we're doing this with each of the characters in turn. You know, when we saw Owen take the information he got about this guy who raped and murdered somebody decades ago, and he's going to go to the guy's house and confront him with it. And you asked this on the episode, Kyle, you said, is that what you'd do with it? And I think we were taking turns going, it's a good question. So now we've got this one for Tosh, and you know, your heart just has to go out to her. She didn't ask to be put in this situation, but here she is. What's she going to do with it? What's the right thing to do?
Clarence, at this point, do you like these characters?
There is something about television lately, and maybe over the past 10 years, maybe longer, where we've tried to introduce flawed characters. I think of the latest, The Acolyte, where we try to introduce flawed Jedi, or any myriad of shows you can think of that the latest iterations, whether it be reboots or whatever, they've tried to sway it in a different direction by having the main characters be very, very flawed. And oftentimes that has not worked out great for said franchises, depending on what franchise you're looking at. But in this case, their flaws is what makes them feel more human to me. It's things that you could be like, oh, I probably would just take that necklace and go off. Or, you know, just each of these characters, we've seen them, we start to see them go through these trials of their job and having flaws in that. And I think when you talk about liking the characters, I think that's what makes me gravitate to these characters, is seeing these cracks in the armor and seeing how they deal with it in a high pressure, high stressed situation, you know, where there's no one to talk to about it.
Yeah.
So remind me to answer this question, but I want to say this before my brain forgets it. You know, did my brain just forget what I was about?
Too late.
Oh, okay. So you were talking about flawed characters. And what was the point you just made, Clarence? Because I was like, oh, I want to ask about. Oh, when you were saying that lately there are characters that are flawed in series that we are watching. So my question is, and this is to both of you, is the problem there the character is the flaw instead of creating characters with a flaw? Does that make sense? In other words, your character is, I am the sarcastic wannabe host who tries to be funny, and that's all I am, as opposed to, I'm Kyle, and I just happen to be someone who tries to be funny and make jokes and whatnot. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
that you're making just that. Here, this is the character you're playing. You're the sarcastic best friend. Oh, you're the evil ex-girlfriend, boyfriend.
Right.
You're and the that's all. Catty boss, and that's it.
Yeah. 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 You can build a whole TV series around the concept of a crime scene investigator who always seems to know how the serial killer is thinking, because secret, he is in fact a serial killer.
Mm.
Right? You can make a whole series like that. But how much more interesting is it if it's somebody who's got a secret that isn't pivotal to the plot, or, you know, but it's just simply another dimension of personality that you know, as Clarence was saying, it makes him real because that's what real people are like. We're not all one thing or another. So, you know.
So to answer, going back to answer my own question, do I like these characters? The only character that I am having trouble with, and I think this is intentional, the way he is written as, I'm just going to say it, an asshole for the most part, I'm having trouble liking Owen. You know, I get that that's the character that he is, and I see his motivation, but he keeps coming across as somebody that if I were working at Torchwood, he and I would not be friends. We would probably not get along very well because I don't like his snarky, rude demeanor attitude.
Well, was he rude in this episode? So I'm gravitating more toward Owen the more episodes we have. In this episode, it wasn't really okay. He may have had some a-hole thoughts, but he wasn't really a-hole in this episode. If you think about it,
that's true. When he's openly rude to Tosh, it's because she can read his thoughts.
Yes,
he's not saying those things out. Yeah,
that is true. So you do have a very valid point. Because what if I were the victim of that same the violation of that? So okay. I get it. But back to your point, Clarence, the fact that I'm having trouble bouncing back and forth of whether or not I like this character means he's a well-written character, you know, that I can find things that I do and don't like about him. But one thing that I have to say real quick, being in HR, and I know we talked about this before we got started. Oh my God, that's an HR nightmare.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
But as we were saying before we started rolling here, that Torchwood does not seem to be concerned with the human relations issues very much. I mean, it's just Jack will be the arbiter. You know, Jack's going to decide, and we're going to do whatever decides.
So,
but, you know, in the theater, there's always a romance going on. If you're in a play for 6 weeks and it's the rehearsal is intense, and especially if it's you know, anything that really demands a lot from the performers, it people are going to be hooking up. It never fails. And if you've been in the theater for a long time, you watch these people, you know, kind of get together and you watch them, you know, making kissy faces at each other in rehearsal and so on. And there's got to be a part of you that goes, oh no. Because before it's over, they're going to break up. And all the rest of us are going to have to deal with that.
Going to have to suffer because I've been in those situations.
So I've just seen it so many times. It's like people say, be happy for us.
I'm happy for you today, but what about us? Be happy for us tomorrow.
I know this is going to happen in 2 weeks. Yeah. So anyway,
that's when they say the show must go on.
Exactly. And that's exactly right. But so that's my gut about this. I'm thinking what Owen and Gwen are doing she's not just cheating on her partner, but this is bad for everybody. And Gwen knows. I think that's really interesting. She said, okay, that's it. That's it. You know, this morning, that was the last time, except maybe, you know, if we did it again today. But after that, that's it.
Maybe in the basement.
Maybe in the basement. And then, yeah.
But wait, the weevil's down there. But will the weevil care? I don't know.
No. Oh, and poor Tosh has to sit through all of this with the What Women Want. It's a bunch of movies where you can read people mind. But oh my God, man, I feel so sorry for her. And knowing that she really has an affinity for Owen, really likes him.
Yeah. And he's just relentlessly mean to her.
Yeah.
So. Mm. And you know what I am impressed with going back and thinking that this is 2006 and looking at the fluidity of the sexuality of these characters, you know, we're talking about a character who in the course of this episode has a romantic tryst with, well, as we know now, an alien, but a female presenting alien, whereas we just referenced her having romantic feelings toward a male presenting human. So I just give them credit for the range, I would say, of humanity that they were showing it even back in 2006. So kudos to them.
It's true. And you know, this is only a slight tangent, but I made a point before we got on the air of looking up the word salacious because I use it all the time and I was wondering if I'm using it wrong. And
were you?
Well, yes and no. Merriam-Webster says that it means arousing or appealing to sexual desire or imagination. And a secondary definition is lecherous. You know, so it can be an insult, you know, it can be a judgment, you know, that's a really salacious thing that guy said, meaning he shouldn't have said that. But really base meaning, it just means appealing to sexual desire. It's arousing. And it clearly that's part of the mission of this series, right? I mean, it's not a coincidence that somebody is making out with somebody in every episode.
Yeah.
And some of it is just really soft porny. It's really, really erotic.
Yeah.
And as we talked about in the one where sex is a weapon that kills people,
it's still
for what it is, it's still being done tastefully. But I was just thinking we should just go ahead and call it what it is, that this show intends to be salacious. It's part of its appeal to its market, and it's why it's on BBC Three and not BBC One.
Mm.
This is Doctor Who After Hours.
Right.
And so, you know, there's a degree to which in the writer's room, if there is one, that people are saying, okay, who are we going to have snogging with whom this time? Let's make it Tosh, and let's make her lover a hot blonde. How about that? Mm. Yeah, that sounds good. You know, it may be as calculated as that.
Mm. Which is really funny because, you know, having watched this years ago and coming back to it now, before, all I really remembered is a lot of Jack having sex.
Yeah.
That's all I remember.
Yes, me too. And yeah, he has not had sex yet.
No. Not on camera. No.
Not on camera.
But yeah, that does become part of his character as we'll know him again on Doctor Who. So we're looking back through that filter.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what's interesting that I think that we will see on this journey is as Torchwood evolves over different networks, because I think BBC Three was the home, I think, for series one and two. And then series three may have been on BBC One, maybe, or BBC Two. I'm not sure if it was which. And then the final season, of course, was co-produced by Starz in the US, you know, the Starz network. So interesting.
Anything goes.
Yeah. So I think the sexuality and the is going to decrease, maybe, as
that's the way I remember it,
you know,
but anyway. Maybe,
but anyway,
at this point, it's working for me. I'll be honest. It's
well, I could read your mind and tell that it's,
I know, I've been told I have a glass head, so yeah.
So let's ask this question. Let me ask this question, and I'm going to ask this to both of you because I don't know the answer. Greeks bearing gifts, does that have meaning that I'm missing?
I was going to ask you that question.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, where does that expression come from? Beware of Greeks bearing gifts.
Beware, because, you know, it's almost like I'm thinking, I shouldn't say this, you know, because you should. I mean, Greeks could have gifts.
It's it's not racist. It's from Greek mythology. It's from It refers to things that happened in the year 1200 BC. So,
yes. All right. So, according to the Google, it says, let's see here, in the modern era, the phrase was translated to Greek as blah 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 blah. In popular culture, the phrase is quoted, blah, 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 blah. Okay, but it still doesn't know what it means. All right, anyway.
I fear the Danans, even those bearing gifts.
Oh, the Trojans. Maybe it's the Trojans.
Yeah, spoken by the Trojan priest, Laocoon, referring to the Trojan horse.
Yes.
Okay, big, that big, makes sense.
Big gift to the people of Troy. They said, we know that a horse is venerated by your goddess Athena. So we're giving up, we surrender, and we've made you this giant horse.
Mm. Yeah.
Brought it inside the city walls. And then all the Greek soldiers came pouring out. Ha ha. Beware of Greeks bearing gifts.
Well, the only Troy that I am a fan of is Donna of Troy. So, and I just want somebody to ask me a question. You know, whenever I say Donna Troy, you want to ask what? Who is Donna Troy? And if you get that, extra stars for you.
Gotcha.
You want me to tell you?
Yeah, I'm thinking of Deanna. So, okay.
No, okay. So, Donna Troy is the original Wonder Girl in DC Comics.
Right.
And she was created and given the name Donna because when they created the Teen Titans, the editor that created the Teen Titans Wonder Girl assumed that it was a separate character, not realizing that the episode or the issues with Wonder Woman and a child was a time displaced child Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
That they were the same person. So then they had to come up with a name. So they named her Donna. And then for years, there were some famous stories called Who is Donna Troy? Who is Wonder Girl? Blah, 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 blah. So anyway.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about. Now that I've gone off on a tangent.
Is this discussing who?
I mean, yes.
Yeah, well, that's true.
I just put on my discussing comics hat for a second.
I just wanted to wrap up the thing about Greek spring gifts.
Okay, saying, please do.
I think I have referenced this before with the two of you because I've brought you things or made you things. And so maybe at the con or whatever. And coming from me, when I bring it to you, I always say, beware of geeks bearing gifts.
Mm. Yeah, I've definitely heard that before.
I have.
So now you know that. It's a pun.
Mm.
Anyway. But yeah, that all comes from the Trojan War, as does the story of Philoctetes being abandoned by his people. And so Mary here is identifying with Philoctetes. So, but going back to your original question, she is then the Greek, if she's going to call herself Philoctetes, and she gives Tosh the gift. So it's a good title. It's like, hey, she's giving her this wonderful thing. Ay, yay, yay. So, yeah.
So you now are in possession. Let's assume, let's ask ourselves, we are now in possession of something that gives us the ability to read the thoughts of those around us. And immediately when given, she says, oh, I'm going to take it to Torchwood and give it to them. And she said, no, you're not. You're not going to. Would you guys, if you had this medallion, we'll call it, that allowed you to read the minds of others, would you A, put it on to begin with, and B, what would you have done with it? Clarence, why don't you go first?
Freaking A. So why should I?
Yeah.
Honestly, I was like, how could I make the most money in the least amount of time?
Yeah.
So that would probably be what I would do with it. But yeah, what about you guys?
Lee?
I have to feel like it would be very interesting to, I mean, always sort of peeking through keyholes. I claim that as a writer, you got to have information, but I am just kind of a nosy Parker. So I would like to just eavesdrop on people's private thoughts a little bit, but I think that would get old real fast. And this story illustrates why. I mean, it breaks Tosh's heart.
Yeah.
To hear what other people are thinking. And I think that's what I would expect. And I would say, no, Jack, can you lock this away? Because no.
Mm. So I'll answer I think I'm going to answer my own question, and that is, I'm going to be honest and say, yes, I would try it. I mean, there's the curious side of me that would want to know if it really worked, and then I would be tempted to use it. Just like you said, I do have that curiosity of wanting to know, ooh, well, what's the neighbors thinking and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But what then becomes the Achilles heel of that and the downfall is either by accident or by design, there are people that you really don't want to know what they really think of you or their innermost thoughts, because how does that then color how you interact with them?
Yeah.
And maybe they're just having a bad day and you're picking up on those thoughts of, oh my God, would he shut up? And you just become offended because, oh, they don't really like me, or whatever the case may be.
You'd never be able to forget it.
Yeah.
This is great. The time scales is in the chat and mentioned the Twilight Zone episode of Penny for Your Thoughts. And I was just about to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It, written by my friend, George Clayton Johnson, who I had the pleasure of working with a little bit. But do you know that, you know, the episode has Dick York, as a guy who accidentally gains the ability to read other people's thoughts. And he works at a bank. And he hears one of the other clerks, he hears his thoughts about how he's going to go into the safe and take out a bunch of money and walk out the door with it. So he drops the dime on him, and the guy is, you know, he's not doing it. It's a thought he was toying with.
Mm.
It's just something it's just a thought experiment. He wasn't really going to do it. Well, so I think, which goes to what you're saying, you would either learn something about somebody else, what they think about you, or you'd learn what they think today. They think right now, you know, and, yeah.
Mm. So I think the truth is the time scales are using the device right now. That's how they knew you were going to bring that up.
That's right.
And Wingrace adds, I don't think I would want this power for friends, for enemies, maybe.
Yeah.
And therein becomes the second part of it. And one of you said this a few minutes ago, but, and this happened with Tosh, is how do you then filter the disgusting thoughts of some people, and how do you keep that from impacting you?
Yeah, she mentions at the end of the episode, when she's trying to make a decision on what to do with it, she mentions like how it could change the world, how it could swing power. And it's one thing when it's localized to your friends, I'm going to quote, work buddies at Torchwood at HQ.
Who secretly hate you.
Yeah, that secretly hate you, that you find it out. That's one thing. But that was a shock to me, but I think they did a great job of illustrating when she went out into the world and just the plethora of thoughts people were having that walked by, some good, some bad, some terrible, some I'm going to go kill my, you know what? It's just the power nobody really should have, and very, very scary. And, you know, I do like that she kind of did the Spider-Man thing. I'm going to say, with great power comes great responsibility. And she went and saved that family. But man, I can't imagine. Can't imagine it, man.
So there's a moment in there where she attempts to read Jack and she can't. Why do you think she was not able to read Jack?
I didn't remember that part of this episode. I thought that was genuinely upsetting. I mean, what a concept. She says it's like you're dead.
Thoughts? Clarence?
From that point of view, I don't think I've ever really thought of Jack that way. Because, of course, we've seen him brought back to, from the quotes here, life. But what does that really mean?
Yeah.
Mm. Is he like, sort of like, Clara, is he spending in the last second of his life?
Or is he just a reanimated corpse?
That
cannot die.
Yeah.
You know, right. Is he the walking Jack?
Yeah. Because, yeah. So the Daleks killed him. He's dead.
That's what it seems like.
I don't. No, I have to just reject that on the strength of what we know about Jack. He's a person. He changes. He grows. Things affect him. He has a soul. He has, you know.
I think they wanted us to think that. I think that was more for the newer audience. That was to try to invest them in the characters and the mystery. But I look at it as that's what they were trying to do from that angle. But I'm also remembering this man came from the same century that River grew up in the future, the 50 or 51st century, you know, the favorite Moffat century. I would assume as a time agent that he had some type of mental block ability, not ability, but training. Because if you're a time agent, I could see that as being able to shield your thoughts from various devices. So that's how I choose to see that.
As if that's something that he's practicing all the time. Because he doesn't know she has the device at first.
Right, so, right. It has to be automatic for him then.
But if you practice it enough, does it not then become second nature? Do we think to breathe, or does do we just breathe?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, that if you're right about that, then it has become completely second nature to him. Just, he's impenetrable.
You know, think of it like this. If we pick up a pen and start to write, we had to learn how to write, whether it was alphabetic, you know, cursive or not. But we, you know, but now you start to pick up and write your name. Well, you just do it. You don't think about it. You just do it. So that being said, let's go back to Jack and his decision to take the alien, which we find out has been killing people all along. And deposit her into the sun.
Yeah.
Thoughts. Clarence, go first.
It kind of made me think, made me go back to when you were talking about HR. in Lee, you mentioned that Jack is HR. He's the one who makes a decision on these things. And it made me think of this situation right here. We've seen several times in different episodes where he's made it, been judge, jury, and executioner in making the hard choice. I started to say the right choice, but I don't know if it's the right choice. He makes the hard choice that, that like you mentioned, Lee, where emotions may be involved. So that's what I thought of. He definitely, it just seems like a thing that's going to continue because, you know, these other characters, some of them more than others, but they are the emotional or the moral compass of the group to, collectively. Whereas Jack, he's able to suspend all of that and just do the right thing or the proper thing in that moment, no matter how it affects who or what. So that's what I thought of it.
Lee, what say you?
Yeah, same, exactly. And, you know, we've speculated, you know, if those of us who come to this from Doctor Who, chronologically, we don't know a lot about Jack yet. So we'll learn things by and by. But at this point, we've got to be asking, what happened to him that made him like this? This is not the Jack that we left on the space station. What?
And we have to remember, this is the first time we've seen Jack, and I keep bringing this up. This is the first time we're seeing Jack since the space station. As you just said, we don't know any of these other, you know, season or series three, 2007 series. This is 2006. Right. He's not returned to Doctor Who yet.
Yeah.
But speaking of how they tie things in, there was a nod to UNIT. They reference UNIT in this episode, but they also have this throwaway line. And if you're not really paying attention, you'll miss it. And I went back and listened to it again to make sure I heard correctly. There is a line that they say in one of the conversations, and somebody, and it may have been Jack, asked the question, why are we having Torchwood briefings with the leader of the opposition party? Do you guys remember that?
Yeah, I think I did get
And I may be grasping at strings here or straws or whatever, but I'm assuming, considering season three is coming up for Doctor Who or series three next year, that the leader of the opposition party would be Harold Saxon.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
So mm-hmm. I just thought that that was a nice little throwaway line that means nothing unless you want it to mean something.
Yeah. Well, that you know, that's not where I thought you were going. I thought you were going to mention that when they're trying to figure out who made that hole in this skeleton's chest and this person's chest, Toshiko mentions John Hurt.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Which we believe is the one and only time in all of Doctor Who, Sarah Jane Adventures, K-9 and Company, Torchwood, any time that an actor is name-checked who will later turn up in the series.
That's pretty cool. Mm. Yeah.
So that means somewhere within his first, as we know them, lives, first eight mm-hmm. lives, that the Doctor at some point watched Alien.
Yes. Yeah.
Has
or to, yeah. or I Claudius or yeah or
one of those elephant yeah. well not, but not the
elephant man no
not the but, yeah. not the right. elephant man oh all right so any other items that you guys have on your list before we move into our favorite quotes?
I think for me it was nice seeing Tosh, while rejected by Owen, she did find love, albeit with an alien. And even Gwen says it suits you well. And, you know, just seeing how much she's been tortured over these last few episodes, I'm just glad she found a little happiness through it all.
I love this remark, too. And it made me go to IMDb to look it up, because this is refers to a British TV series that I'm not familiar with. But while Owen is puzzling over the skeleton, he says he's figured it out. And Gwen teasingly says, "All right, Amanda Burton." So I had to go find out who that was. Amanda, you know?
So interestingly enough, that you said that, Mr. Shackelford, if anyone wants to know who Amanda Burton is, question of the day. Who is Amanda Burton? Question is.
Beautiful.
She is the first of lead character in Silent Witness. She is the star of Silent Witness for the first 8 or 9 seasons before it becomes an ensemble cast. From the point she leaves mid-series forward to season 27, which is currently in, actually has already finished. Series 28 is coming up. And Amanda Burton also returned to Silent Witness for the 25th season. And I just love this.
That's I couldn't help it. Great theme. Well, I wonder what you were queuing up there, because, yeah, I don't know the series. But she plays a forensic pathologist, and so that's why it's a pop culture reference that Gwen could call.
Yep. So when she said Amanda Burton, I was like, yes, I know who that is. Yay.
Boom. Well, did you know that one of the many, many guest stars who has turned up on Silent Witness is Daniela Denby Ash, who is Mary in this episode of
Touch. That's cool.
Yeah.
And someone who has a recurring role on Silent Witness. I don't know if she still has a recurring role as the DCI that brings cases to the Institute and has or asked them to investigate is Gemma Redgrave.
Huh.
So that's interesting seeing Kate Stewart as the DCI. So
she's secretly there from UNIT.
She's there for UNIT. Yeah. So yeah, whenever she said that, I was like, okay, finally I can make my Silent Witness reference and be like, make Clarence go, oh God.
I'm glad I brought it up.
So
yeah, and let's give hats off to Owen in this episode, because he really was steadfast in trying to solve this problem with the holes in the chest. I really like that. That's one thing in this episode that make me really gravitate toward the character a little bit more, because we've seen him do some crazy stuff since the series began. But, you know, to really see him really dive into his job and take it seriously, I thought that was pretty cool.
Cool. I'm just so happy I got to talk about Silent Witness. All right. So I say let's go into favorite quote. And Clarence Brown, I'm going to start with you. Favorite quote.
Oh, man. Mine is going to be when Tosh was reading thoughts. Gwen's thoughts start, oh, sweetheart, the jeans and the boots thing has really kind of had its day. And Owen's thoughts are, what's she talking about? She can be dead weird. What if she'd be like in bed? Catholic but grateful.
Yeah, Catholic but grateful. Yeah,
that's weird. That's weird. Why would you say that? But yeah, I just love those little harsh. Thoughts.
It's worth watching this episode, you know, with the subtitles on, just to get these snatches of people's thoughts as they walk past Tosh on the street and so on. That's so well written and well observed. I just really admire the writing of all that. Mm-hmm.
So. See, that's one of the benefits I get for always having the captions on. I get to get those little tidbits. So.
No.
All right, Lee, favorite quote.
Yeah, to the center of the sun. Shouldn't be hot. I mean, we center there at night and everything.
Jack, how dare you, man? It's terrible.
Predictably, mine's going to be Gwen, and she says, you know the skeleton we found at the site? Well, Amanda Burton here has just completed the postmortem. So,
there you go.
All right. Favorite scene. My favorite scene was when Gwen was talking about Owen in the postmortem, and she said, hey, Amanda Burton here just completed the postmortem. That's Dr. Sam Bryan. Anyway, that's my favorite scene. Clarence, favorite scene.
I really like Tosh taking initiative and tracking down the guy with the murderous thoughts and stopping him from doing something really bad. I really like that.
Sweet. Lee.
IMDb says that they talk about this on one of the extended, or like on the DVD cut or something, that she really hit him with that golf club. She was supposed to pull it short, and she just,
no pulling punches.
Oops. Hate it when that happens. Anyway, if it looks realistic, it's because she really socked him with it. Anyway, my favorite scene is Mary's reveal of her true form. I just thought that was beautiful. Cool. I love the design of that alien with this glowing skeleton inside. Just what a great, great effect that was.
And they did a good job in it, because we were talking about some of the previous episodes not being so good.
Yeah.
That looked very good.
I really liked it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Final rating. Lee, I'm going to stay with you. Final rating. What say
you? I'm giving this 4 hearts ripped out of your chest out of 5.
All right. Clarence Brown, final rating.
I'm going to give this 4.5 alien transporters out of 5.
I'm going to give, how many was that you gave it?
Me, Clarence? 4.5.
4.5. I'm going to give it 4.5 Dr. Sam Ryan's out of 5. And who is Dr. Sam Ryan?
I think she's on Silent Witness.
Really?
Don't play the music again. Yeah. We're going to get pulled from YouTube.
Right.
Hey, we are not monetizing. And
already been warned.
Hey, we are not monetizing. And and I'm only playing little brief clips.
There you go.
So, and I am encouraging everyone listening or watching, go out, watch Silent Witness. It's awesome. Anyway. There you go. All right, guys, this was fun. I had so much fun. I didn't get a, oh God, from Clarence with the music, but
it's not corny.
It's not corny.
I think it was the crowd, the people listening, or the ones saying, oh God, no, but
maybe so.
Okay.
You do realize, both of you, that I have 2 goals in every single episode, and I'm just laying it out here. Mm-hmm. What are my 2 goals?
Spoilers.
One is to make Clarence say, oh God.
That is one. That is 50%. The other one is to get Lee Shackelford to say, you know what? That's a really good question. I'm glad you asked that.
Good.
Those are my two equal end of the spectrum. One is thoughtful. The other is irritated. Mm. But regardless, those are my two goals. All right. So for everyone in the chat who are still with us, thank you for sticking around with us all the way to the very end. Yes. We appreciate it. For everyone listening at a later time, thank you for listening. We always appreciate you. And I'm going to do something completely different that I have never done on any episode before. I'm going to end it with...
Oh, God.
Demonetized.
And with that, we'll be back next time.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.